something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT.
I saw Barack Obama in Halifax.
We play I Can't Come to Work Guy.
And more jams from 1996. That's all coming up right now on TNT.
Another 1995 jam.
A 95 jam in episode 196. Because it was left on my list from last week. And I'm talking around the vocal.
Famous in our TNT lexicon as being the song I was playing on my bike with my headphones on when somebody flagged me down. I was like, hey, aren't you J-Rock?
Yeah.
And all they could hear was Baba Dooby Doop Doop Doop. She was still,
this is another one.
She was still a boss.
Like this. Oh yeah, she is a boss. This is another one of those sonically ridiculous songs. Like if you're mixing a record or something, you'll throw this on to try and figure it out. Like how do they? Okay, this is, look how wide and perfect this is. And the layers, or they're just put in together like mint.
What do you mean by wide?
Well, it's a huge area of song, like the space. That's the same thing as like Phil Spector jams, like Da-Do Ron Ron and all that stuff, with where the room sounds really big.
Yeah.
And there's he called it the wall of sound, but he'd have like 50 musicians in the Capitol Studios room, main room, and like it sounded like chaos when you're sitting in the middle of it. Like if you're playing a tambourine or whatever of all these 50 people, sounded like chaos, but out in the control room, it sounded incredible. So it's just the idea of understanding the big picture when you're making music to create a space that just sounds very wide. So you create melodies and notes that have a lot of vastness in between them, but you also pick a lot of different sounds and like things that have reverbs and you know, to create a big kind of echoey world. The Enya stuff, right? Like the big,
yeah,
everything's all huge and just Orinoco flow is that jam?
Yeah.
Like that's all bass, it's the same thing. It's just everything is massive reverbs.
There's a young band called Wild Rivers, and they're great. And one of the band members tweeted the other day, what is a great album to put you to sleep? And for me, it's Enya Watermark. It was 1988.
Is it?
But I don't think I've ever heard the third song on the record because I used it for that very reason.
You fall asleep?
To help me fall asleep, yeah. It's such a sleeper.
It's all piano at the beginning.
Yeah.
When does she start jamming? Does she even? Skip.
I mean, Orinoco Flow is probably the biggest jam.
Well, there's no singing in the minute mark. Oh, I think she's coming. Wait.
It's so good.
Oh no, she's not. This is more of like a soundtrack. You're not kidding. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna hit Orinoco Flow instead.
We can sail, we can sail with the Orinoco Flow.
You don't. Let me you know the lyrics.
On the beach on the shores of Tripoli. Let me sail, let me sail.
Let me. This is how do you know the lyrics?
Cause it's, man, all like. It was a bop.
I always thought it was like,
Man, it's a story.
She's saying stuff.
But you couldn't sleep to this jam.
What?
You couldn't sleep to this jam.
No, this is like getting up and picking your clothes jam.
Yeah. It's Sunday morning folding laundry jams.
No, what else is it? It's like make an Eggo waffles jam.
Your new potential in-laws are coming over for dinner for the first time, and you want some wallpaper so it doesn't feel awkward and quiet, but you don't want it to be too overbearing.
Trying to create some vibe while you're sweeping jam.
Yeah.
You're like, this sucks. Put this on. You're like, hey, I'm actually doing some world's work. Feels like you're on a boat rowing to Iceland and all you're doing is dusting. Oh, here's the jam. Oh. It's just her singing it. She doesn't have like masks with beards doing backups. Oh.
No, it's her. That's it. That's what you get.
Wouldn't that be awesome though if they were like a tribe of dudes? Like that look like Robin Hood's band, just doing like, oh.
She's a solo act. Like, probably she just needs like a Casio keyboard and she can blow the roof off the place. Although I don't know, like, who buys tickets? I'm going to the Enya show. I guess people do.
What do you mean? Enya's like just coming into town, but she'll like do like Scotiabank styles, like arenas.
Really?
I think so, yeah. She still rocks. I mean, that kind of music, it's like Yanni. I don't know anything about Yanni, but that guy plays arenas all the time.
He plows.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so but doesn't speaking of arenas.
50,000 people.
Wow. Speaking of arenas, Jeremy Taggart, I went to see Obama speak at the Scotiabank Center in Halifax. Think about the fact that he was in Newfoundland the night before. Think about the fact that a president who is not sitting and hasn't been for a few years can sell 9,000 tickets. There was a 3,000 ticket waiting list for him to speak, like sit in a comfy armchair and speak for an hour, and the tickets were like $300.
No, I'm not surprised that he could do anywhere and jam it up fast.
That's star power though, man.
I know.
It was so refreshing.
To hear him speak is like, yeah, that's it's some heady talk. It's a wonder to hear him talk. It's like it's really nice to hear flowing intelligence on the reg.
I realized a lot of things while listening to him speak. The first was, and this is like hardcore takeaway information, like that I left and stayed with me. He has considered so many of his opinions. He's not just blurting. He is measured and precise in the things that he thinks. And it reminded me that in order to think about things, you need to give yourself time to think about things. Right?
It's not about answering right away on the virtue of how smart you think you are.
Yeah, and it's okay to say, you know what, I need to think about that. And in order to think about things, you need to give yourself the right environment to actually think about things. It sounds so obvious, but that's one of the things I like about going for a walk with Carol. When we're going for a walk, we have nothing to do but talk to each other and kind of catch up. If we're talking while we're doing the dishes or, you know, doing whatever around the house, you're not as focused on the task at hand.
Yeah, for sure.
It's so important. So he has thought about so many things. The second thing that he said that was so interesting, he was talking about Canada-US relations, and he said, honestly, of the things that stress me out, Canada and US relations isn't even on the list. Like, yes, there are issues like timber, say, and to the people that work in that specific area, of course it's important, and I don't mean to belittle the issue, but we'll put some smart people on that. We can get that figured out. He said it's like having issues with Michelle. Like, okay, that's just something we have to figure out, but it'll be fine. It's not a big monumental NAFTA hurdle. Yeah. Well,
little NAFTA bubble, no sweat. Little water resource or sellable commodity. Yeah.
Think about him saying, we'll put some smart people on that. That just sounds like such a good delegator. Hey, George, do you want to spearhead the timber thing? Because it's a bit of an issue right now. I know that's your area. That's so smart. It was just nice to be in the presence of grace and poise. He said the thing about being president is poo runs uphill in that job. So by the time it gets to me, it must be a real issue. Because if I have a lot of smart people working for me, and if anyone could figure it out, they probably would have. So all you can do... The question was really like, how did you manage the stress? And he's like, well, all you can really do is make the best decision you can with the information you have. So if you have done that, you know, a lot of these issues that come to me are kind of 49-51. Like, you could go either way, and there are arguments for both, and there's no clear answer, and there's no right answer all the time. But you just have to make the best decision you can. And if you feel like you've done that, then of course you can sleep well. You can't always control the outcome. He said, a lot of people say, you know, I'm worried about this generation. I'm worried about millennials. They're not engaged. They're not whatever. He's like, they are so engaged and so sophisticated and so knowledgeable, just in a different way than we were. And a lot of them see that politics doesn't really work for them because it doesn't speak to the issues that are relevant to them. So we have to be adaptable and change our system. This was the interesting thing too. He was just dropping truth bombs for an hour straight.
Was he doing some Q&A? Because that's his other strength, is even if he's generally posed a question that like he's got to kind of back up, he's wicked at that too.
It was fireside chat. So there was one woman who was the host, and she asked all the questions.
Oh.
So this is what he was saying about, like, you know, there are countries who are willing to pay very little to manufacture things or use child labor, or, you know, they violate human rights in order to have a better price point for things. He's like, we will never be able to compete with that. We will never be willing as a society to go that route. So we have to beat them with innovation and creativity. Like, those are our strengths. So those are the things that we should be nurturing and encouraging, because like price per unit, we'll just never win. That's so smart.
Yeah. It's scary to know that there's so many other countries that can't be controlled, you know. But yeah, I think when you think about all the other issues where child labor, but or even the climate issue, where it's like in certain aspects it's being ignored to the point where time's kind of running out for that kind of a concept to continue, when it's hard to legislate or change countries' laws that are just rocking it. But that's the future, kind of what they say, the biomimicry, where they kind of look at animals or wildlife to try and copy things to get ahead, because you can't, you know, those kind of things you can't even compete with, like computers can't do that biomimicry stuff. That's a human, the only hope for humanity is to look at what's around the world and that exists and use that information to further everything. Like, I saw a thing on solar, have you seen those solar flowers, basically, where they open up and then they follow the sun?
No.
Just like a flower? And they, by following the sun, they get like 60% more sunlight and solar power. And to the point where not only can one of these little dish type things create enough power for your home, it creates more power and it can go back into the grid where you can actually get your money back. And they're only like, they're not cheap, but they're like $30,000. But I mean, it just opens up in the morning like a flower and follows the sun. It's crazy.
Crazy.
But that's a great example of what I meant. Like for the future, of you have to be one creative. But like if you're trying to beat computers, that's the only way.
This was interesting too. He didn't say the word Trump. He didn't have to. But what he did say.
Yeah, it makes sense.
He didn't have to. He didn't give him any spotlight or kudos or anything. But here's what he said that was like a soft diss. The thing that I don't understand is that the people who believe in the science of driving a car, they believe that if you put gas in a car, it makes it run. That's science. They don't believe that the emissions from that car go into the atmosphere. Like, that's what you're saying. You believe in part of the science. You believe in the science of your phone working, but you don't believe in the science of, climate change. He's like, that is the one thing that confounds me. It's the selective science stuff. And the other thing that he kind of alluded to, he didn't even allude to it, he said it outright, the worst day as president was the question. What was your worst day? And he was talking about Sandy Hook, obviously, children being murdered.
Yeah.
And he said, not only could I not get any traction on changing the legislation around gun control, but I couldn't even really get the Republicans to even look at it in a real meaningful way. And he said, I had to go speak at the memorial, the Sandy Hook Memorial. I remember it. I remember watching it and thinking what a crazy day, awful, sad, painful. Like, speaking of, there are no words. He's like, I had to go speak to families whose six-year-olds had just been murdered and tell them everything was going to be okay. Can't imagine.
Too much. I was actually in my daughter's class helping that day, that morning. Like, I came back to the news of that just after playing with a bunch of 5- and 6-year-olds in the classroom.
Wow.
It's nuts, man. It's just too much.
Imagine, like, our kids do, as I'm sure your kids do. They do, code blue drills.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that my kid knows a code blue drill is already gross.
Yeah. Well, it's like air raid tests for my parents or my dad in Scotland. They had to do that stuff where everyone has to put their head under the desk and...
Right.
It's the times of now that you have to deal with stuff like that. I just can't believe it. And this, again, it's not as much of an issue, and guns aren't as available as it is in America. And I mean, the guns that we do have up here have a lot to do with the crime, and the guns that kind of get over the border through that. Like, the reason why there's a lot of handguns in Toronto is probably because of the influx of illegal weapons coming through criminals across the border. You know, it's not people going to Walmart and buying them. In a lot of the cases with violence in the cities, in Vancouver and Toronto. But, I mean, it has to change. I mean, at least there's stuff like Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever, stop selling them, AR-15s and the whole concept of fighting for the rights of having a gun to shoot pumpkins in your backyard. You know, it just doesn't make sense. Yeah. I understand if you're hunting, having a small amount of ammunition for that and having them locked in a safe. But the concept of, like, needing a handgun on the reg or, like, on your person, or it just, it, 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 to me, creates conflict, because there's only one way that people die is a gun. It's not, if it wasn't there, then it would be not a part of the issue. But I understand that it's like I've been on Twitter and mentioned anything of the sort, and you just kind of have to fight for your, for what you tried to say to begin with a lot of people that don't feel that way, and they think that they feel safer with it. Whatever, man. I just think in the big picture, there's a lot more murders going on by guns in America than anywhere else. So it's kind of like the classic, where you're having a conversation to deaf ears for me. Because like you said, the NRA are... it's just such a hardcore bro thing, the fact that they don't listen and they don't change anything, you know?
And they're powerful and they're wealthy.
Hopefully it's not the same. I know their numbers are falling, but just the fact that for some reason someone who hunts has to stand up for it, I don't think that's where it's getting lost. It's not about having the right to hunt or have a gun. It's about the chaos that it's being thrown all over the place. It's just way too out of control. So you have to give up some of that to save yourselves.
This was the thing overall about how Obama communicates. He doesn't say anything, like when he was talking about Sandy Hook and how that was the worst day as president and it was devastating and he tried to change the legislation. He also is very careful and considerate to say, I'm not talking about people that hunt to feed their families and hunt for sustenance to keep their families going through the winter. I'm not talking about those people. He always carefully considers and represents both sides of any point and any argument. And this was the kind of the final thing that he said in the night, and it really resonated with me too. He said, there's so much yelling these days, really, and I'm paraphrasing what he said. There's so much yelling on social media and in the world that we've stopped listening. And it's really important. He said the difference between Stephen Harper and Justin Trudeau, for example. Justin Trudeau is a friend, and obviously our politics are a lot more aligned. But you have to be able to listen to the opinions of people who think differently than you in order to figure out how to meet halfway or affect change. Like, change is possible, but you have to be open to hearing what other people are saying. This was maybe the most interesting thing he said, and pretty timely given the last couple of weeks in Canada. He said, you have to understand for some people, when people move here from other places, people that were living here already feel as though their way of life is threatened. And it's not enough to shrug that off and say, well, that's stupid. You have to try to understand where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. It's so simple and so obvious, but imagine for someone, he's like, I'm from Hawaii, I'm a mixed kid, and my name is Barack. Mm-hmm. If you lined up every six-year-old in America in the late 60s and said, which one of these kids is going to be president, I would probably not be in the conversation. So for someone who no doubt has encountered prejudice and racism. And I remember reading when he was running for president, we probably talked about this at the time, he and Michelle had to have a very real conversation about the likelihood that he could be assassinated and whether it was worth it to risk that.
Yeah.
For a guy in his position to say, we have to consider people whose beliefs are diametrically opposed to ours in order to affect change, it's just so big.
No, I know.
He's a big ideas guy. It was really a pleasure, especially at this moment, to listen to someone so eloquent and kind. There you go.
And he crushes it.
He crushes it. And Atlantic Credit Unions was a big presenting sponsor. And our boy Mike, who is the CEO of Credit Unions, who pulled the trigger on your 2 cents, got to introduce him.
Nice. That's a
did a great job.
You won't forget that.
No.
See that they, you know, the real conversation is when, like, if you had dinner with Barack Obama, just like you hear him have like quick back and forth with people, or if he meets somebody, or if he's like chatting with a musician that he met or something, like, it's always very interesting. Like, did you see him on that Bear Grylls show?
No.
It was good. Like, he's out, you know, on the in the nature with him, hanging out for a day. And you just kind of get an idea where if you just allow somebody to talk for 5 minutes, you see who they are. There's no arguing. It's either you see if they're nice or vindictive. All those kind of things kind of do kind of come out, even if you're talking generally. You get a feel for a person, especially if you're doing stuff like that, like climbing or doing things that are out of your comfort zone. It really kind of opens up your self to everything. And I think he seems to be the most kind of together president I've ever seen, like the most on TV and off TV. Somebody you would number one like to be proud of, and kind of be, I guess, in enamored. Like, it's, he's a true a person that has affected the world. And if you look at what the guy does, like how many books he reads in a month, stuff like that.
Oh, man.
It's just, how can you talk about somebody negatively when they're doing so much? You know, that's what I mean, I guess, out of all of it.
He's
a lot of people that still, you see it online on social media, that think they don't like the guy, or I don't understand who people who will side with a political party or a political side so much that they won't accept the intelligence of the person on the other side. That to me is the true meaning of ignorance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But for him, he's just, I think it's a bulletproof thing. You know, he's just a bulletproof of, like, you can't say that guy isn't accomplished and respectable.
The interviewer said, this was one of the first questions, I've spent the last couple of days with your Secret Service guys, and they have said he's pretty simple, straightforward guy. Is that true? And Barack said, you know, for Michelle and I, we had lived married life. We'd raised our kids. We kind of had our game tight before we became famous. So he said, I miss the intellectual challenges of the job. What I don't miss is the trumpets and the flyovers and the, like, the pomp and pageantry. It's like, I miss the thinking I had to do in the job. But he said, we were already pretty grounded so that we didn't get swept away in it. We kind of thought it was silly, that part of it. But man, I'm going to tell you something. Every time he said his wife's name, the place went up.
They love her.
People love Michelle Obama.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to see so many black Nova Scotians there, Halifax, as you know, has a complicated history of segregation. And though it has the largest black population per capita in Canada, it hasn't always been a good one. It's been a complicated and sometimes ugly relationship. And to see so many black Nova Scotians there and try to imagine what that meant to them. There's a guy named Quentrell Provo who's done a lot for violence and youth, and he's trying to make his neighborhood better, and done a lot for kids, and he arranged a screening of what was the movie last year? Name's escaping me. Like, first action movie to
Black have. Panther?
Black Panther. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, arranged a screening of Black Panther for a bunch of Nova Scotia school kids who wouldn't have had access to the movie theater otherwise, like one of those guys. Mm-hmm. And Mike from Credit Union heard that Quantrell wanted to meet Barack because it's his idol, and so Mike made cool. that happen.
Nice.
Like there was just so much cool stuff around it, and it just felt really good being there. And I guess my point is, as cool as it was for me, I suspect it was even more meaningful to many of the people in that arena, and that was not lost on me.
That's amazing. Cool, man.
There you go, bud.
Was he? Is it just an East Coast trip for him, or is it?
I don't know.
I don't think he's not coming this way.
He did St. John's in here.
Yeah.
But he must be making some cheddar.
Oh yeah, that's some cash. Right? It's like stand up.
And there's
styles
no overhead. It's two armchairs from Wicker Emporium and two handheld mics. There's no flash pots or Marshall stacks or like
that's what
it doesn't
I mean.
Cost anything. Yeah,
the comedian styles where you just roll in and just cash out.
But no imagine production. The logistics around smuggling an asset, which I think is what police officers and Secret Service kind of refer to people of that profile. Maybe I'm making that up. But imagine, like, as soon as he finished, some guy comes on stage and says, "Hey, everybody, stay in your seats because we have a super huge surprise. You won't believe it ending to the night." And as we were sitting for about 5 minutes and the choir started singing, Nova Scotia Mass Choir, they're amazing, but it occurred to me, oh, they're getting him out of the building.
Oh, yeah.
They need to whisk him out of there before everyone, like before the mad rush.
Who was the special guest?
Oh, it was the Nova Scotia Mass Choir.
Oh, I thought you were like, they were bringing out some like huge deal.
No.
It was a big
But people,
phony
Canadians
moony.
Are so polite, everyone stayed in their seat.
Oh, man. So we can get out of town. That's great.
Hey, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to play I Can't Come In Guy. Guy who's calling and making crazy excuses, or maybe they're true, for why he can't show up for work.
All right.
Be right back, buds.
Fucking ready?
Hey, bud.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Let's play the I'm not coming in guy.
Okay.
I'll be the first not coming in guy.
Okay, I'll be the boss.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Ring, ring.
Good morning, this is Trent.
Hey, Trent.
Yeah?
Trent.
Davis?
Trent, yeah, it's David.
Davis? With an S?
Yeah, it's Davis.
What? What's going on, man? Why are you whispering?
Well, I guess you're probably wondering why I'm not at work yet.
Well, yeah, you're supposed to be here in 2 minutes. We have to Skype the Davis account. The people with the same name as you. Remember? That's why it's easy to remember.
I know. But I'm in a bank robbery right now.
You're in a what?
A bank robbery. I'm on the floor. I can't talk.
Yeah, right.
Louder.
I'll see you in the boardroom.
No, I'm not kidding. Come on, Trent. Trent!
I'm your one Trent. Call and you're in a bank robbery right now?
Shh! Listen, please don't talk too loud. He can't see me talking, but I swear to you, I'm in a bank robbery. I'm at the TD around the corner.
Have the police been called? Like, should I call
no.
them?
No! What do you think I'm calling you for? But listen, it seems to me that there's a person dialing 911 right now. So
what do you mean it seems to you?
They are. So just talk to me
for a minute.
Well,
what am I supposed to
listen,
do with the Davis account? Should I still Skype them? Or what do you want me to do? Do you want me to try to punt it?
You're going to have to take it yourself, Trent.
Oh, come
I'm
on.
I'm telling you, listen.
You've been
listen.
Trying to get out of this for 10
listen.
Days.
Trent, all I was going to do was just open the thing with saying I shot 75 yesterday. That's all you have to say. Say you did well at golf and then go on. That's
but
all
I've
they care about.
But I've already told them I don't golf.
No, pretend you
that
golf.
That was the whole
just
point.
Say,
the only reason you're on this account is because he likes to golf so you guys can talk about your birdies.
I know. Just tell him.
You are so selfish.
Listen. Just say, I bought a new Scotty and I shot 75 yesterday, boys.
The Scotty has nothing to do with it.
Listen. That's all you have to say. I bought a new Scotty and I shot 75, boys.
Okay, yeah. Good luck. Good luck with your bank robbery, liar.
No, that's all you have to say.
Yeah, okay.
I'm trying to help you with this account.
Hope to talk to you later if you make it back, but you probably won't because you're in some crazy bank robbery. I believe you. Bye. Idiot.
You just blew it with poor Davis.
Would you believe someone if they called and whispered I was in a bank robbery?
I don't know, but I don't know if I'd go the other way just to say. What if he is? And like
if he is, why would he call the guy? Why would he call his work colleague?
Because he's late and he's like trying to like talk him, keep it together. He's scared. That was the approach I was going with. Like, come on, I just need to keep you on the line here. Just don't hang up. Like one of those.
I'm going to ask you to remain calm. One of those. Okay, I want to do one.
He's going that far. He's going that far to miss the Davis meeting. But isn't that funny, though? Like, he just wanted to tell him, like, just all you got to do is pretend you're good at golf, and that's all that matters.
In your mind, were you playing it as though he was actually in a bank robbery, or he wasn't?
No, he was, like, watching SportsCenter.
Yeah, okay.
Just hanging out. Yeah,
for sure. He was lying.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to do a guy.
Okay.
Bring.
Rosensberg, Stearns, and Fast and Wilds.
Yeah, is that you, Gordo?
That's me. Hey, is this you, Gerald?
Yeah, bad news bears,
the hell?
Man.
Gerald, what the hell are you doing? You need to be here right now.
Dude.
Brock's here.
Listen to the story. You're not even going to believe
here,
it, Gordo.
Though.
You know my cat, Mittens, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know how he kept jumping out the window, and you know how we live on the second story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know how we put those screens in to like keep them in because we don't have a heat pump or we don't have air conditioning, so we're talking to the HOA in the building. We're waiting to hear about whether we're going to get air conditioning, and they're trying to run ducts, but they're seeing if the structure will take the ducts to put the air conditioning in our apartment. So in the
Gerald,
listen to me.
I told you.
Gordo.
I don't care.
Listen to me.
Your cat.
Listen
you don't have a cat. Brock is here right now and needs to meet
in 10
minutes.
If you will just let me finish the story.
Do you think Brock cares about your cat?
Gordo, I'm just trying to explain why I'm not there, and I will urge you to extend me the courtesy of listening, please.
Get to the point!
So we put these screens in, and Mittens at the first couple of days was like, I'm not going near the window, because you know cats are kind of finicky, and they don't like change. But then Mittens was like, he started like, you know what, I'm going to actually lean against the screen because it's kind of holding me in. I still get the fresh air, still get to see the sunshine, still get to watch people walking by.
Hey,
what? Gordo!
Hey, Marcy. Marcy, can you shut up.
Oh, you're not
Marcy,
listening.
Can you get Brock those cupcakes right there? I mean, we got to kill 5-10 minutes here. I don't know what's going on here. I'm just trying to tell some stupid story about his cat opening the window. He won't shut up. He's supposed to be here. This is his account. Listen, Gerald.
Did you ever hear the joke about those people that named their parrot Brock? Brock. Anyways, so Mittens is leaning against the screen, right? When I leave for work, and I says, "Okay, I'm gonna leave for work, and I'll see you when I get back, Mittens." And you know, I guess maybe in hindsight, maybe it's on me a little bit because I did leave the window open, but I thought I knew he'd lean against the screen. I didn't know that the screen would actually come undone. And so when I walk downstairs, you're going to think this is crazy, and you're going to think I'm lying. You're going to think I'm saying
hey,
this because I don't want to see Brock.
Give me
but
one of those cupcakes.
As I walked downstairs and I walked out of my building, I looked up when I forgot to say that my backpack was open when I left because I was going to stop and get a lunch. And the waiter reminded myself to get a lunch
hey,
so
hey,
I leave my backpack
hey,
open.
Hey, Gerald.
So I put a lunch in my backpack.
Gerald.
Gordo, let me
Gerald.
Finish. It's all
you know what?
Done.
No,
so
I know.
Out of my building,
I know.
Look. Mittens is falling out of the window, falls in my backpack. So suddenly I got a cat in my backpack. It's like a cat pack, but I can't find my key to get back in the building to put Mittens back in the thing, and I'm so distraught. Next thing I know, Mittens jumps out of my backpack. He runs in a car. He almost gets hit by a cab, so I have to pick him up. Anyway, okay. Long story longer.
You know what? You know what, Gerald?
I didn't get hit by a cab, but I do pick him up, and I do take him to the vet. And when I get to the vet's closed because it's Monday, and I forget the vet's closed. I'm
going
to take Mittens all the way home. And the short story is I'm on my way in now, but I have to stop,
you know what?
Make a couple stops, and it's going to be 2 hours.
Hey, Gerald, you know what? Don't worry about coming in. You're fired. You're an idiot. That's enough.
Am I?
Click.
Am I an idiot? We're doing this again? I see. We're doing
this again?
You're fired. You're being catist. You're being animalist. Wait till I go on Snapchat and tell people that you hate animals.
I'm being bossist, and you're firedist, and you're unemployed now-ist.
Okay, yeah.
So go find a job-ist.
All right, so see you in 2 hours.
Goodbye.
Yeah, bye.
Jeez.
I love the I can't come in lie. It's fun.
But the guy should care about his job, though. That guy's like wouldn't have lasted anywhere at a job.
Well, here's what I went with. I went with this happens once a week, and the boss always says you're fired, but he still shows up at work, and so he knows, like, oh, okay, I'm fired. Here I go, I'm fired, but he's not really fired.
I can't stand the I'm not fired guy after he said he was fired guy by the guy who fires people.
Okay, I'm fired. Taggart, it has both girls have had birthdays this past week, and Suge had a dance party with a DJ.
Whoa, I saw the video.
Everyone in grade 5.
Swank.
Yeah, I sent you the video. It was bumping. They were playing Yeah by Usher, which was Indy's request. And then last night, Indy had a party at Burger King with 15 of her closest friends because the King just renovated in Truro and they put in this banging new playroom. So we've been in birthday mode for a week straight.
Well, Lisa had her birthday on the 12th, so we were partying hard here. Yeah,
did you go to Burger King?
We did not go to Burger King. We had a party here, though. Just chill.
Did you?
Wendy, our neighbor, made an incredible cake. Buttercream raspberry. And, we just chilled out and hung out. It's good times.
Wendy's part of the family, isn't she?
She really is. Wendy and John, their whole family, April and Jonathan, they're good neighbors. We're close, for sure.
Yeah.
Don't you like it when you have neighbors that are awesome?
Yes.
And you can, like... It makes you, you know, you get through life better because you can help each other and have each other's backs.
Good.
Like, it's nice to have neighbors that are good.
I'm lucky enough to have my in-laws who live just down the road, as you know, and they're
That's
on the
better.
Squad. We spend every Friday night with them.
You got the free babysitting service. But that's right. Did you say her mom won't do it?
Oh, yeah, her mom will do it.
Or what is it? How is it?
My mom won't do it.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, but...
My mom lives in the Munro.
Isn't there a story? Maybe I'm thinking of someone in my family, but it was someone who's like, oh, I'll watch them, but I'm not, like having to run after them and all that part.
Oh, no, that's not here. We got it dialed here.
Yeah, it's all dialed lucky. There. I'm thinking of it. Good stuff. You don't really have... You have one neighbor... Basically, across the way.
Yeah, we have one neighbor across the street. These folks bought the house and have been fixing it up like crazy, which is the best scenario for us.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to do another call-in in at work guy, or do you want to move on?
Yeah, let's do it. You'll be the call-in in guy.
All right.
Oh, the reason I got to birthday mode, by the way, is because Carol and the girls are on the way home to have cake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So if in the next 4 minutes I'm like, let's take a break, bud, that's what's happening. We're having cake.
Okay. All right.
Brrring. Hello? Kent? Kent?
Clarkson!
Yeah.
Yeah!
What?
Oh.
Kent, are you okay? What is it?
I'm in the woods! Okay. I'm in the woods!
Are you hunting? What are you doing in the woods?
I was fishing and then I was walking back.
Yeah.
And I'm in a bear trap. My ankles are in a bear trap. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That sounds painful.
Yeah, so you're gonna have to take care of that Nobleton account for me. Ah, can you?
Like, don't worry about the Nobleton account. I'm just worried that you're okay. What can I do?
Well, I think I almost got this open. I'm gonna need a few hours to go to the doctor. Make sure there's no bacterial infections.
So wait, you're in? Are you currently in the bear trap?
Yeah, well, almost out. I'll just. Oh, you're really bad. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, it'll be a couple hours, maybe.
Okay. So you might be in this afternoon?
Maybe. I got to speak to I might have to cut my leg off first.
Can I just ask you one question before I let you go?
Yeah.
Do you know where the toner is for the printer?
Yeah. Yeah, I left it in the left drawer of my desk. Find it up by the Wonder Bars.
To get into that?
No, it's open. It's open under the Wonder Bars.
Under the Wonder Bars. Do you know if I use the black and white or all color?
Whatever, man. Take whatever you want. Okay. I gotta cauterize this thing.
Okay, cool. Take care. And, I hope you're here this afternoon because it's Janice's birthday.
Happy birthday! Tell her happy birthday for me!
Okay. We're having cake, so I'll save you a piece of cake. So if
save me a piece!
It's a surprise. So if you're here by 1:30, we're gonna hide in the boardroom, but if you're not, what I'll do is I'll save you a piece, and I'll put it under the Wonder Bar. So just think under the Wonder Bars is where your piece of cake is.
Oh, perfect, fantastic. Just put it on top of the Wonder Bar so the icing doesn't get wrecked.
Oh, that's so smart. Yeah, right. Maybe what I'll do is I'll put a couple of toothpicks in the top and put some Saran over it so that the toothpicks kind of keep the icing off the cake.
A little bit of a waste of plastic, but maybe just don't worry about it. Environment, you know.
No, I'll use a real plate and I won't use a plastic fork or anything because I know you have that plastic fork that's reusable that you bring from home.
Oh, okay.
Hey, are you an ice cream guy? I've never asked you this.
I actually have some Haagen-Dazs from the fridge in the office.
Okay. Okay, perfect. I'll make sure that there's some ice cream set aside for you and cake. And I think we were going to have nachos, some nachos, just kind of a mixer. So I'll set aside some nachos without cheese so you can melt the cheese on it when you get here.
Why don't you turn the top lights off? There's a few lamps in the back storage. It'll look a little bit more intimate.
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea. By the way, is there anything I can do for you?
No, I'm good. I'll see you in a bit. I gotta go.
Okay, take care. Good luck with the bear trap. I like the bear trap guy.
I think the bear trap works.
So was the bear trap real?
He was selling it
too.
Yeah, he's hanging out playing Fortnite or something.
Oh, man. Have you ever lied to get out of a gig?
I never had a gig to lie to get out of. And that would, a job?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not concerts. But,
I'm sure I've asked you this. Have you ever missed a show?
Yeah, a couple. I had some issues, my girlfriend at the time in the early 2000s had some personal issues, so I took a week away.
Really?
I think that's it, though, yeah.
Hi. Hey, guess what?
What?
I have to take a break, bud.
Oh, yeah, cake time, right?
It's cake o'clock. Not to sound insensitive about your girlfriend in the early 2000s.
No, it's all good.
Be right back, bud.
Have a good cake.
Let me ask you this right quick, you know what I mean?
Just pounded some cake.
Did you?
Just pounded some birthday cake.
What kind of birthday cake was Indy's birthday cake?
Chocolate cake with vanilla icing.
Ah, the classic.
Yeah, classic.
Ours was, again, buttercream. I like the, you know what I hate about birthday cakes? That if you go and you they're fancy is that fondant crap they put on, the really hard outside layer that, sure, it looks like a Daryl Sittler's face exactly, but it tastes awful, that stuff, you know what I mean?
That,
like,
yeah.
It's like, sure, it's like, you know, SpongeBob. It's like, looks exactly like it, but it's not at all edible. Like, it's all hard, and it's like, sucks.
But that's,
and it's all over fancy cakes.
I know, but if you ever tried to make something decorative to go on a cake with soft icing, you can't do it.
Yeah, you do. That's how we roll. Always.
But you need the you just fondant tell them, to make the shapes.
No, you got to pick a cake that's like where it can be smooth, or actually texture of buttercream is looks good. You know what I mean? Like, you can do all kinds of stuff. It's just, you can't do the, like, intricate, weird stuff, which doesn't really, not really necessary when you're trying to make something that's supposed to taste good. You know what I mean?
So
you can do it without it, is what I'm saying.
Buttercream is somewhere in between fondant and icing?
It's just, like, the typical icing. It's not that it's, like, it just tastes great. Tastes the best.
Curious.
But I mean, for example, we went and got a cake made for Jack's birthday, and it was, you know, one of those places, but we were specific to say we don't want the fondant. We wanted just straight up buttercream everywhere. And they did it. And it tastes better. It just doesn't have that, like, first layer that you kind of probably want to just take off anyway, and hopefully there's some icing underneath it.
For some reason, all I have in my head is, we don't want the fondant, to the tune of, we're not going to take it. We don't want the fondant. No, we don't want the fondant.
Yeah, and the verses are all about how it doesn't taste good, and it's like wax and
it's
all
hard.
That. Like all in depth with the right to choose it line, you know, like how the verse is all in depth about fondant.
Curious.
Why it's got to go.
Hey, so last week we played some 95 jams because we're right back in the packet.
Yeah,
and
we
so
are,
this week
96.
We're going to drop just a few 96 jams.
Just a little bit, yeah.
I can't believe, by the way, there were so many solid 95 jams left on the table.
Oh, yeah, there always is.
And I don't even know what my criteria was for deciding which ones to play. But I did the same with 96. I pulled just a couple bangers. And I know you did too. Can I go first this time?
Sure.
Because this was, it wasn't great, but you could not have a compilation from this year without including this song because it was so everywhere, but it's awful. Okay, that's enough prefacing. Here you go.
Yeah, oh yeah, Macarena's.
Yeah.
The Macarena.
Does it surprise you that that was suddenly 24 years ago?
I know. It makes you feel really old, fast.
This, a good game of YouTube. How many views does the Macarena have?
Oh, Macarena. That's got to have 400 million at least.
81 million.
God damn, why am I so mad at this?
Well, surprisingly, because you would think a song like that has its roots in global rhythms.
Oh, I like it.
Might have traveled further than it did.
That's awesome. But yeah, that song was, again, massive everywhere. You probably couldn't go anywhere out in public without hearing it a few times.
Heck no.
How about this one?
Whoa.
Maxi Priest.
That kind of girl.
Like, why don't you look up this on YouTube and you tell me how many that girl featuring Shaggy views are on that, Max.
Okay, I'm not going to look it up because I want to guess without being swayed.
Okay, yeah, sure.
But I'm going to say we grossly underestimated... Was it a Shaggy song last week?
It was a Shaggy, yeah. It crushed everything, yeah.
So then, to that end, I'm going to guess 190 million views.
Okay. I'm going to guess, just because I've been getting crushed and I'm going to lowball in my head, but it is Shaggy, I'm going to stay with that 80 million number.
And what is it?
My guess is 80 million.
Oh, am I looking it up?
Oh, I thought you were looking it up, yeah.
Shaggy, that girl, okay?
Yeah, look it up.
Wait for it. I thought, so you're not bumping them from YouTube?
No, I'm bumping them from iTunes.
Okay. wait for it. Official video, right? Official video views.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, stand by.
Here comes the ad.
Stand by. Cool video song. Okay, got it.
Shaggy.
94,000 views? That can't be right.
No. See that? Yeah. Girl, sometimes you can't find... Sometimes they'll fire that on, like...
There you go.
Five can't or six different things. Yeah, whatever. Okay, let's move on to your next one.
Okay, my next one is... a Canadian one-named female singer who isn't Alanis, Jan, or Avril, but she is a phenom, and this jam was 1996.
Celine.
Yeah.
For all the times
you stood by me, for all the strength that you couldn't say. I think it's a safe buy that Gretchen McClurk's favorite singer is Celine.
Oh, yeah. Everything I have, because you love me. Well, wasn't this Titanic year, too?
Was it?
96? I think so, yeah.
Huh.
Big year for Celine.
My Heart Will Go On. Stand by. Because
I know that she sold like 20 million copies of that record.
And it was the first take.
And Corey Hart had two jams on that. And so did Aldo Nova. Remember? He got loaded on that too.
Was My Heart Will Go On a Corey Hart jam?
No.
Not what?
No, what? It didn't matter. The album was still rolling out the shelves.
Oh, for sure. But this says the My Heart Will Go On, a music video, Titanic soundtrack, 10 million views. That can't be right.
10 million?
Yeah, it must be more than that.
I don't know, man.
It's you go. 4.5.
Yeah.
We live in a strange time where a 5-year-old auditioning for America's Got Talent singing that song has more views than the actual video for the song itself.
Oh, man. Like, my kids watch these, like, puppets, these, like, skit shows on YouTube, and I'm like, that's not funny at all. And then it's like, you look, and it's like, just came out, like, an hour ago, and it's like 600,000 views already.
Crazy.
It's like, what? And it's just like some guys making voices with puppets, and they're kidding. Like, I'm like, come on, really?
Come on, man. Why do I even try? Why am I trying to come up with stuff?
Well, it's hilarious, though. And it's not even like these guys are kids. You can hear that they're adults. So
it's an interesting sort of journey you take in creative endeavors where at first you're like, man, why? I don't get it. This is brutal. That's so stupid. And then you just kind of accept it, man. Well, it's not for me, but yeah. I guess they're crushing it. Good for them.
Well, there's other stuff that they watch that I get. It makes sense. Like, they're, you know, younger people that have intelligent stories, or they're creative animators, and they tell stories with that, and it makes sense that they're successful, but it's just... It's not unlike music, where you just kind of get confused if you were to walk into, not, you can't these days, but back in the day, if you went into HMV. I remember being with a Ray Garraway, who's passed away now, but a great drummer from a band called Salvador Dream at the time that were opening up for OLP. We walk into HMV at Yonge and Dundas, and it was like three floors, remember? It was just massive.
Yeah, right.
And just albums from basement to the top floor of all different genres. And he walked in there with me, and he just looked around, and he's like, man. And it was like a frustration of just like, there's way too many bands. He's like, what am I doing even trying? You know, like, what the hell? This is insane. And now it's like, I'm sure there's that many, but you just don't see it. There's no physical form of, like, the record store vibe. But
the internet is the biggest record store in the world.
That, and that, what that happened with Ray, definitely in 1996, for sure.
It's daunting. And you think there's so much stuff, why do I even bother? But at the same time, yeah. Isn't that just the best argument for doing something that you get excited about that makes you feel good and happy?
No, I know. I know. But you think when you're doing something with music, you're kind of by yourself. So there's a lot of individuality in that.
Right.
And I guess in a sense, independence of that feeling. So when you go in and you see all the other people that are doing the same thing, you kind of are taken back a little bit, like, oh man, I thought this was like, you know, not, you just kind of see it for what it is, in a sense. It's like, okay, I do this. I thought, you know, I might have thought I was special in a certain way, but now you understand you are special by being able to do something that you love and it's musical and you can communicate that way, but like you also have to start to evaluate that against other people that are doing that and then try to find a way to monetize it or how to get into it and all those other things. It's just it's very daunting on a lot of levels, right? I mean,
and yet it also would suggest that if you make something that rises above the din, it must be pretty good.
Yeah. For sure. Like,
the internet is the great equalizer in a sense that if you fire it on YouTube, that's not a label working hard to put your music out there, exploiting their relationships with radio stations. That's the people found it and shared it because they liked it.
Yeah. No, definitely. How about this jam that is it my turn?
Yeah.
My dad, Ronnie, used to crank this one all the time. It was like
a 96er, I'm curious.
Yeah. He would pound this. Prodigy.
Wow.
Firestarter, he loved it. I guess
really?
It was the junior Bakugi of him inside, right? Like Firestarter, like just like this shit disturber beyond, right? That's this song. He just loved the anarchy of this jam, so he would crank it and just kind of get up fired up sitting in the front of the house with my mom, just cranking it on stereo.
Ronarchy is a good word.
Well, it's like chaos. Some, you know, like that classic idea of what punk is just kind of true chaos and everything is against what people think is normal and what people think is tranquil. You know what I mean? Just like absolute nuts, fear. Violence.
He loved all that.
Throwing fire, throwing Molotov cocktails in the street at night.
Homemade electric chairs, it was that.
Rigging up an electric chair with your mates, putting your mate in it.
It's a good Saturday afternoon activity.
Well, it's. I need to preface the Junior Bakugi story. I've told it before, but when my dad was in a gang with his friends in the Bronx in the 50s when he came from Glasgow and he was only like between 8 to 11, 12 years old, was in this little gang of people, young kids that like did stuff. Like there was like the smart guy that took care of science and there was like the guys that stole stuff and the guys that were tough that needed to strong arm people, like a whole the gang. And my dad was the new kid in the neighborhood and they took a shine to him because he had the Glaswegian accent, and they rigged up the science kid had rigged up this like makeshift electric chair, and like it was attached to the light sockets or whatever however he rigged it, but they put my dad in it as like the guinea pig for it, and had tied him in there, and they turn it on, and he rocked his socks, man. They almost killed him. Insanity.
Long live the Ronarchy.
Yeah, no, no kidding, right? But this is what something that they rigged up to intimidate like other gangs in the neighborhood, like get a guy in there for find out about what their information they're holding. Like, isn't that nuts?
Homemade electric chair. It was a different time.
It was. Oh, Ronnie, good times.
Good times, bud.
Yeah.
Okay, gotta go. I have to take the girls to dance. Good chatting, bud.
Good chatting. Talk to you next week, bud.